Good evening. Thank you very much for the invitation. I enjoyed my intro with this rather strange moment of being described as somebody who worked on Doctor Who. I'm sort of waiting for Doctor Who and Planet Brexit or some sort of episode of the series that is possibly less surreal than some of the circumstances we find ourselves in. I'll give you a little bit more detail on the perspective I'm bringing to you. So 20 years ago, literally today, I'm reminded by LinkedIn's algorithms, I founded a digital media agency, a company called Magic Lantern, which is still going today, although it is a little bit like Trigger's broom from Only Fools and Horses. We've had a lot of heads and a lot of sort of handles. In the meantime, we don't really do the same thing anymore as we did then. And we didn't know it was a digital media agency because there was no such thing at that time, really. This is around about 10 years before YouTube, if you can remember that period. And we set out to create something which was a fusion of what you like, what you might think of as content and digital technology. My background is I'm an undergraduate lawyer who spent most of his time at university putting on shows and plays and fiddling around with technology in the context of that. So I was sort of, in some ways, a sort of early prototype of the sort of person who would now be described as being fused. Their skills are fused. In arts and humanities research terms, I'm fused, which is also what happens when you get too much electricity down a circuit. But actually, for about most of that 20-year period, I've been sort of battling questions about what I actually do and what am I? Am I kind of geek or am I lovey? People love stereotypes in this field. Am I lovey or am I geek? So am I arrogant, self-obsessed, and emotional? And that's the lovey part. Or am I a geek, which means it doesn't matter because I have no friends who know that about me. I've used that feeling progressively tired of that idea for most of that time because I've written scripts and I've written code and I've written databases and the people I work with most of the time are nowadays are able to do those things and expect to be able to do those things. What I think I actually do is I spend my time sitting in between trying to understand culture and human behavior, usually in relation to media technology, so that then I can try and set up the conditions, whether they're financial, organizational, technological, for really creative people, artists or real creatives, to do what they do, whether that is create moments of enjoyment or learning or challenge. And by the way, I do this in the commercial world, and by the way, it makes money. And that's a long-winded way of saying, in policy terms, I work in the creative industries. I'm going to come back to that in a moment because it doesn't exist. It's a useful policy sort of shorthand, and we use it a lot as a term, but it isn't a sector, even if sectors are a helpful tool, full stop, in this space. So I work in that field, so I've sort of floated around across TV, across games, across apps, across websites, across operas, West End shows, films, all sorts of different things, bringing these sort of skills and mindsets together. When Dougal phoned and offered me this great opportunity to speak to you, he said maybe I should describe the creative industries as a sector. We're not usually at Foundation for Science and Technology events. So I think it is worth doing. The DCMS definition says the industries have their origin in individual creativity, skill, and talent, and they have a potential for wealth and job creation through the generation and exploitation of intellectual property. Now, job one is not to then say, well, so does my industry, because that is not an exclusive definition. So actually, it becomes more interesting and more helpful possibly to describe the products, services, experiences, and content that are created. So the sectors are advertising, architecture, art and antiques, crafts, design, fashion, film and video, interactive leisure software, which is not the same as computer games, they're in there as well, music, performing arts, publishing, television and radio. Those are the sectors. Now, the kind of astute amongst you will appreciate that technological convergence and change has set a number of those sectors directly against each other over the course of the last 10 to 15 to 20 years, will continue to do so until some of them cease to exist. And I say this as a former chairman of the UK Digital Content Forum, where I was charged with chairing 28 sector bodies from those different sectors. Now, the good news is those sectors, we're pretty good at those sectors. GVA from the creative industries was 84.1 billion in 2014, and it was 5.2% of the UK economy. I find it strange how difficult it is to get Treasury and others to remember those numbers and to take them seriously. For 4 years running, up to 2016, which are the last numbers I have, creative industries have grown as a proportion of UK GVA, and creative industries GVA increased by 8.9% in the 2 years, 2013 and 14. So we are talking growth sectors. There are 1.8 million people employed, 30% of them in London, but there are 50 clusters around the country, and they export £18 billion. There's a perhaps apocryphal case study that suggests that the net value to the UK economy of Harry Potter as a brand is as large as any single drug developed by UK pharma in the period Harry Potter has existed. I'd love to know how they prove that. But either way, it's a good speech line, isn't it? So I spent quite a lot of time in the actual creative world, building companies of up to a few million in turnover, three or four different companies over that period. But my sort of public policy roles have been partly sector representation or partly regulatory. I was at Ofcom for 5 or 6 years as a regulator, and I've just finished at the Gambling Commission where we ran the National Lottery. And my academic interests, where I've had visiting chairs in Bournemouth and Oxford and now at Ulster, are all about this kind of intersection between digital technology, culture, creativity, and public policy. And that's how I wind up on the Council of the AHRC, where I've been with Andrew Thompson, who's somewhere in the room there, responsible for leading the AHRC in the aspect of the our response to the industrial strategy and the bidding rounds for the challenge fund that goes with it. But most of the time, do remember, I work, have a kind of real job, although even my mum doesn't know really what I do all day, in creative industries. So some comments on the strategy from that place specifically. First, as all the speakers have done, really, I welcome the intention and I welcome the new funding into research. Of course I do. But I'm disappointed, verging on dismayed, by some of the thinking around my sector, which I think is slightly emblematic of a bigger question about the focus on manufacturing versus services that runs through the strategy. So I'm going to use, if you like, my sector as a subset of that. The landscape that the strategy envisages is not really a context I understand if we're coming from the creative digital sector. It feels quite heavy industrial. It feels quite specifically sectoral. And the mindset that I've encountered, which colleagues of mine refer to as proper job syndrome, when will I get a proper job, it has this roots in a kind of nonsensical cultural divide, a sort of C.P. Snow divide between arts and sciences, which people in my industry just don't understand. It just doesn't make any sense to us. The lovey geek stereotype is not helpful. And there's one very sharp expression of that, which is the definition of research and development is actively excludes everything we do. Everything that happens in arts, humanities, much of the social sciences, and therefore pretty much all of the creative industries is not R&D, according to the definitions. I'm not sure that's a fit for purpose position in the long run, for any country actually, but maybe there's a Brexit opportunity there to get ahead of that particular curve. My sort of third observation would be that the kind of muddle in the thinking about my sector is particularly surprising, disappointing. There's quite an unsophisticated understanding of the relationship between cultural subsidy and the creative industries. The creative industries policy of this country is not, oh, they want another theatre in Liverpool. That's really not what it's about, although I have heard that said. And also the relationship between the subsidised cultural sector and the commercial is really finely nuanced. All of the multiple hundreds of millions, possibly billions of pounds that have come from the musical Les Miserables began at the subsidised Royal Shakespeare Company. All of the multiple hundreds of millions of pounds that have come from the musical Matilda began at the subsidised Royal Shakespeare Company. We have innovation structures in the public cultural sector which are super important. To the commercial sector, which are thought of as being subsidy, not as investment, and that thinking is really behind the curve. And likewise, sort of some of the thinking around the really beneficial taxation schemes and some of the regulatory interventions that have happened in my sector. When I was at Ofcom, we were responsible for monitoring the effect of the 2003 Comms Act and the shift of rights ownership from UK broadcasters to UK production companies. That regulatory act by the government at the time has created £1 billion a year export industry, broadly speaking, in television. And yet they thought we were regulating swear words. We were also regulating swear words, but we were also regulating in an economic way. And there's a somewhat unsophisticated understanding of that. And a slightly paradoxical willingness to dismiss the social and cultural power of the creative industries in this country whilst extolling their soft power abroad. So the potential of cultural and creative industry storytelling as part of cultural cohesion, as part of diversity, as part of a number of really significant important policy areas, appreciate here. A couple of final things before I get to a slightly more positive sort of perspective. Policymakers seem to disbelieve their own numbers about my sector, which is surprising. Those are DCMS figures I gave you earlier, but we have them constantly challenged by policymakers. Well, either let's get the numbers better or let's explain why we're disbelieving them, because I've never been in a room where that happens to another sector. Now, I may be wrong, but I've never been in that room. And then finally, just to close on observations on the strategy, the timescales we're working to don't make sense for my industry. I'm sure it's similar for others. The process has been extraordinary for all the reasons that Graham talked about. But actually, the timescales to measure success are too short. Extraordinary, just ridiculously too short. If you are working on a large-scale creative industries proposition, we think we're quite fleet of foot compared to infrastructure. It will take me 2 years, 3 years to put a show in the West End. It will take me 4 or 5 years to put a film on the screen. And the industrial strategy will be done dusted in the timescale. So there is a mismatch even for so-called fleet of foot industries. Where are my priority areas to just close? People with greater experience have talked about skills. You would expect me to make a plea for STEAM. Those creative, communicative individuals are not being made only by a very solutionist, technology-driven view of education, and I don't think anybody really believes in an exclusive mindset there. There is a rather interesting policy paper about the balance, about how do we think about robotics versus the creative industries. I'm writing a piece at the moment called The Art of Artificial Intelligence. They're quite interesting territories. Where do you sit in policy terms with these new technologies? Just finished a piece of consultancy work with Google on that. They're interested in those sorts of questions. Those skills are new emerging skills areas. They're not the sort of thing that you will get simply by teaching people through the old systems. I mentioned already the definition of R&D. That could be a good opportunity. And I would, of course, with my HRC head on, stress the need to get the research landscape really playing alongside our industries. I think the new strategy fund is a great opportunity to really construct effective models of collaborative R&D between industry and the research base. And I'm encouraged by noises we're hearing about that from our AHRC work, and hopeful also that we can find a kind of really powerful axis with Innovate and others to really get something motoring here. My fourth point would be to do with the importance of recognising public investment, as I said earlier, when we make it. I'd like the BBC and the Arts Council and others to be acknowledged for acting as a foundation for innovation when they do, and to have their feet held to the fire to make them do it more. Because that can be a really powerful growth engine. And I think it's important that we have a better understanding, a more nuanced understanding of these sectors. You would expect me to say that. And I know the HRC is looking to this area. So my personal work that I just trail briefly that I'm doing now with the University in Ulster is we're about to actually launch a centre, Creative Industries Research and Impact Laboratory, which is looking at the creative industries on a kind of decade-long trajectory in terms of strategy and policy making. Where might the really big questions be coming from? And that's in a country where there's been an enormous influx of creative industries investment. If you watch Game of Thrones, you're watching something made in Belfast. You may not know that, but you're watching something that the craft skills, the sets are built by, the makeup is done by, the costume is done by, and that could have a very long-lasting benefit. And in an economy the size of the Northern Irish economy, that's an enormous net impact and net incoming benefit from outside. So one of the things we're going to be looking at there is those dynamics, the longer-term dynamics. So just to close then, hopefully we'll get past this kind of half-levy, half-geek mindset, because the 21st century world is all about those shifting boundaries as we know. And that requires an understanding of what the humanities can bring to this computerized machine age that we live in. I think, if anything, the last year should be teaching us that sort of very hyper-rational, very efficient hypotheses based on markets are not necessarily terribly good predictors of human behavior. That bringing a deep understanding, what I would think of as a thick data understanding, kind of ethnographic understanding, is an important part of how we can work together across disciplines. That takes us really to a position where hopefully when we assess the facts of a sector like the creative industries, we can think in strategic terms about the future we're imagining for them. And to do that, I don't think sectors are helping us. I like to think of myself as an anti-disciplinarian, somebody who thinks not across sectors, not between sectors, but in spite of sectors. I'm interested in the problem, the solution, what happens to society and culture as a result. And the industrial strategy is pretty silent on that way of thinking. I wouldn't expect it to be otherwise, but I would hope it would listen to points of view that come from that perspective. Thank you for listening, thank you for your time, and thank you for the invitation.